I don't know, Johnny. It would be all right, wouldn't it?
It would be fine. Just got to go with it, mate. I've got my cigar. Do you want to have a little look at the cigar?
Or are you going to send me a picture of your e-cigar? There we go. That is the most hipster bourgeois shit I have ever seen. Hello and welcome to what essentially is the inaugural episode of The Cross Section. I am Jim Cross, and with me is long-time friend, short-time collaborator, John Edward Harrington. Johnny, we've started. I just dived in. I thought I'd get you on the tail end of your e-cigar.
And, advertisement.
No one else can see this but me via the power of Skype, but you are now reclining in your chair like some sort of Rockefeller / boxing coach.
I was thinking more of the don't give a shit, but I care about my health. So you want to look like a fucking badass, but you still want to have a smoke?
I don't know.
New electronic cigar.
I don't know if a little blue LED makes you look like a badass, I'll be honest.
It does to my friends and my mum.
To your mum.
He says I look bad. I'm a naughty boy.
Oh, you're such a bad bum. No, mum! Badass, it's American! Oh, you're such a bad body. So, Johnny, this is it. We're podcasting. It's happening. To explain to currently hypothetical listeners at this stage,
the voice is in our head. Let's just do it to the voice in our head.
Okay, Judith, Kenneth, thank you for coming. This is our podcast about current affairs. This is the unwanted guff into the well-to-do world of current affairs. This is the half-hearted jizz, the middle-brow look at the world of entertainment, arts, culture, science, technology. It's a cross-section of news that's happened
It's
recently.
Really just a couple of lads just having a little chin wiggle.
Well, when you put it like that, sign me up and slap my ass. This is it. I used to do a podcast, as you know, Johnny. I feel the itch, and I also feel that you deserve a platform.
Oh, thank you very much.
Because you're quite funny.
Get your tongue out of my anus, Jim.
It smells and tastes like poo. So the plan, at least, is to just kind of tell each other about the news, because I don't know about you, Johnny, but being a sort of borderline nihilist, reformed romanticist, I look at the world and want to do a little sick of my mouth some of the time. But more than that, I feel disconnected. I feel like I don't know what's going on out there, and I don't actively care. But that's a problem, you know, as a young human, that the weight of the world is presumably on my shoulders, and I should care.
Yeah, so, I find that it's just exceedingly transparent how the workings of certain parts of society and life in our consumerist pit of loveliness.
It's got very philosophical already. We haven't even started talking about anything. You've come across as very Bolshevik and revolutionary already, Johnny.
I just can't help myself.
I wonder what our political leanings are. So this is essentially a response to the news, the media that is kind of very self-important and has an agenda. And this is our attempt as non-experts to rifle through it and hopefully make some sense of it, or at least make some fun out of it. The plan is to bring some stories that we've found across the web, a cross-section of stories across different genres of news?
Genre, I believe.
Forgive me. Genre of news. And just talk about them, I guess. Shall I kick us off, Johnny?
Yeah, why the fudge not? Let's do it.
Okay, so I'm gonna come out and say that I haven't read any of your stories yet, so I'm gonna go into those blind. But I think That's all right. So whether you've read this or not. Well, this one's great. So I got this off... we've been talking about doing the podcast for a while, and this is a story from weeks ago now. So not necessarily fresh in anyone's mind, but something very close to my heart for a number of reasons. This is a story from a school close to where I grew up, the Robert Napier School in Gillingham.
Yeah.
And I got this from the BBC News website, and this struck me as a human interest story, which is interesting, but essentially gives no hope for humanity. So the story goes, to reduce it down, essentially a six-year-old girl at the Robert Napier Primary School was complaining of having a headache, and then essentially went to the school nurse and was told that a parent and or guardian would come to collect her and take her to the local medical centre, whereby she would receive treatment. Now, this happened,
okay.
Charlie. This happened. But what... What was odd was that she wasn't collected by a parent and or guardian. She was collected by a grandfather, you know, an elderly gentleman, the grandfather of another girl.
Oh, I see.
Right. So basically someone else's granddad came and picked her up.
And what was the result of this situation?
The grandparent took her to the doctors, and the doctors basically just gave her some paracetamol and told her to go home. And... the girl made no protest of this. The granddad wasn't even aware of this, nor was the school. The only way anyone found out anything was up was later that day when the girl got home, told her mum that she'd had a headache and then gone to the medical centre and the man had taken her. And it was at this point that a rather concerned mother was able to piece together and retroactively work out what had gone on. Essentially, the MP for Gillingham and Raynham said this incident could happen at any school around the country. I beg to differ.
Yeah.
I really don't think that the Etonians would be getting this sort of treatment. But my question to you, Johnny, is how does this happen? And I don't mean that on a sort of confusion level. I don't mean that on the two girls had the same first name, and so you know the wrong parent was called. I just mean this on a moment-to-moment level. How does a girl get into a car with an elderly gentleman who is supposedly cogent enough to drive a car?
Yeah.
And he not think that something is up?
Okay, I need to know a few things about this, story. A few key factors, if you will.
Go.
Firstly, was the other girl's granddad aware of the whole incident? Did he just roll with it? Did he just go, oh, this girl's coming. All right, yeah, I'll take you to the hospital. Well, or was it...
Looking at this BBC News story, I get lots of, you know, there's stuff in bold type, like, never again. And, you know, all these quotes, like, as soon as we realised this had occurred, we launched an investigation. You know, all of this sort of media-trained PR speak. But there is no mention of what old granddad thinks.
How dare they? How dare they? He was the Samaritan that picked this poor six-year-old girl in the streets where the school left her.
I really admire the journalist that wrote this story because he or she manages to circumnavigate any contempt. but manages some clever sarcasm. So there's one sentence: it is understood that the girl had the same first name and was in the same class as the man's granddaughter, i.e. oh wow, that's completely understandable then, isn't it?
Or if you can imagine it in another way, we're just grateful that this old man wasn't psychopathic and wanted to kill her then fuck her, or vice versa.
But I just think he's, you know, they must have been in the waiting room together.
Should we just the little girl's like, oi granddad, should we just fuck off?
Well, but
do it, I've got an headache.
but surely this man has got to look at this girl in the waiting room and go, that's not my granddaughter, or say, how's your mum? You know, or anything. But the whole...
Do you know what I think happened? I think he left it too long to question it, to ask any questions, and he just accepted it.
Yeah,
he was just like, okay, this is my position today. I'm... She's just agreed with it. Okay,
it's one of those, like, awful moments in, like, an Adam Sandler comedy of recent years where it's just an awful, farcical moment,
And Adam Sandler's playing the little girl and the granddad as well.
He is. You're right. And it's only as he walks through the threshold of the GP that he realises he's made the mistake and goes, fuck it, I've got to roll with it now.
Yeah.
It gives me no hope for humanity, Johnny. It really doesn't.
I've got faith in the pockets of great humanity out there.
I just think that I think there is really something to be said about asking some questions.
Yeah.
You know, when a child is picked up from school, like,
be skeptical. Okay.
Or
yeah.
Like, do you know this child? Have you ever seen this child before?
Not. Do you want to take this child to the hospital?
Yeah, and then maybe he thought he was being drafted in for something. Maybe that's how he viewed it. Not as, do you know this child, but can you do us a favour? Who knows? We'll never get to the bottom of that one.
I do not think so.
So this is a Gawker article, which I found almost a month ago, and the headline is, "The white student suing to overthrow affirmative action was too dumb to get into a chosen college." Now, that sounds complicated, but this really is, again, another really terribly damning story which doesn't reflect well on humanity in any respect. Yeah. This is essentially a story about a white 23-year-old woman from America called Abigail Fisher. And before I even begin, if you're already thinking she sounds like white trash, you're there. To preface this story, let me tell you that if you don't already know, affirmative action is akin to political correctness. So it's the idea that in order to kind of allow students into university of all the diverse backgrounds, there are a number of places set aside at Texas University, the university in question, and many universities and other institutions, you know, globally. There are some places set aside for people who aren't necessarily, you know, the bright, privileged, working middle classes. Or whoever, you know, especially in America, with a university being such, or college rather, being such a, you know, inclusive environment, being so expensive, you know, they have a system whereby people who couldn't necessarily afford it can get places. So basically, this is a story of
indeed, Jim. Such out of detail.
I feel like I need to really preface this because
what's coming next.
You really need to fully understand the full extent of like how inclusive and good an idea affirmative action is before I explain the story and it becomes completely apparent about how damning it is. So essentially, Abigail Fisher is a student who applied for the University of Texas and failed. And she is basically saying that the reason that she didn't get in is not because she's not clever enough, she didn't work hard enough. It was that because an affirmative action student took her place. I.e., she was saying that if they weren't so inclusive and letting people in, she would have got a place.
Yeah.
Unfortunately...
Sounds like you're leading up to something. This big... thing.
This big crescendo. Basically, long story short, Johnny, is it doesn't matter whether she's black or white, she's too fucking dumb. And she's a terrible racist who's basically saying that if they weren't letting the black kids in, she'd already have a place. But unfortunately, her SAT scores are too low that she can't even get in anyway, regardless of that.
Isn't it hilarious how completely self-indulged some people are? And there's this almost illusion nowadays, don't you find, that there are just a lot of people just think that everything in the world owes them shit because they're fucking great. I am me.
This is so it.
I am me. And I'm she's so belligerent.
She's so belligerent. She's so up herself that she's taking this. She's suing them, and she's obviously going to, you know, this case is going to fall flat on its ass. She's taking it to the American Supreme Court. I mean, she's taking it to the top. I mean, she's too thick to realise that she's, you know, dead on the ground before she even starts. I just, as you say, it's indicative of a culture of entitlement.
Is her uncle a Republican?
Well, I mean, she's definitely an awful fucking racist, because she does cite the fact that she's basically blaming affirmative action, not her own inability to learn, retain information, or tick any other boxes the education system requires. She is just too fucking stupid, so fucking stupid, she doesn't got any self-awareness, and she's just generally an awful person.
I think she's just got in too deep. She's like, fuck it, I've got to run with it now. I've gone too far.
Is this another example of people being too proud of making a terrible mistake? It's spiraling out of control and then just running with it. Don't back down.
Like, no, you've got to go with it. Otherwise, you know, you lose your faith, don't you?
Yeah. Like her and the poor old granddad are two people who are incredibly out of her depth.
It just kept rolling with it because they just didn't want to lose face.
It's a terrible.
And that's why this world's got to, ain't it? Fucking hell, not wanting to lose face.
Well, you're right, Johnny. And I think that, I mean, if you saw her face, if you click the link and have a look at the article, there is a big picture of her face. And my advice to her is lose the face. Just don't be so precious about it.
Yeah.
Something I know we both wanted to talk about was nuclear fusion.
Yes. Oh, of course. Yes, nuclear fusion. Okay. The fact that, there's been some advancements as of late, hasn't there, really?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that this is an interesting story, at least up until this point on the show. We have just had some really damning and awful stories that would make you lose faith in humanity. But this is a potentially interesting one, because, you know, the whole thing about nuclear fusion, the opposite of fission, which is what we have at the moment, fusion potentially unlocks unlimited clean energy forever.
Being influenced by the sun, of course, and how that produces energy. It is quite interesting, isn't it? Because it's like we've actually done something that we've been trying to do for many years now. Yeah. And I think it's fucking great, really. The fact that we are like attempting to collide two hydrogen atoms to recreate helium in that intensity of like creating this immense amount of energy from something so tiny. It's like on a quantum level. It's quite spectacular, isn't it? And think how much the sun is producing of that consistently and constantly. It's been doing it for. It just baffles the mind, and it's still got billions of years to go. Wonderful.
The question that is immediately springs to mind is for a technology which can potentially, I mean, obviously, you know, we're not scientists, but you know, the
potential. Is that what we're talking about? Shit.
Well, speak for yourself. potentially, it unlocks the secret for unlimited clean energy. This is not a finite resource which can be fought over. This is something which kind of sets us free from that. Yeah. So my question to you, Johnny, would be: is how does this happen when, of course, so much of the world's wealth, power, and general bastardry is caught up in, owning and controlling natural resources? How does this fit in? Because this puts a lot of very powerful people potentially out of the business. And how do you contain and control, or subsidize, or, you know, make money out of an energy which is essentially unlimited?
I imagine it's by being the first person to actually claim it and claim the experiment, the idea as their own, and working through them. But like, it's one of those things where it is really, it's down to us, isn't it? You know, it's like we can either, you know, carry on making all the fucking mistakes we usually do and fuck up the habitat that we live in even more so, and, you know, deprive more people, or we can work towards, you know, something that's positive. And I'm fucking getting deep again. I think I suffer from deterioritis.
Don't worry. I was watching earlier today, Johnny. I was watching the Carl Sagan the series online. I know that's very close to your heart. You know, the series of videos online, which I think are taken from a TV show he did. Obviously a few years before his death. But I think something that kind of resonated with me watching that earlier today was how, you know, obviously, you know, Sagan's, you know, philosophy of the universe and of science and the cosmos is one of how, you know, actually, to counterpoint all of this horrible human interest story that I've chosen to draw attention to about selfish, idiotic people, especially that last story, is the point that actually, you know, on a cosmic scale, we are completely irrelevant and we are a blip on the face of time and space. And something that Sagan sort of said in one of those videos, which I was watching earlier, you know, is about how on a cosmic scale, you know, it's not impossible to believe that there's other life out there, and how it might, you know, we could potentially view civilizations and life based on whether or not, once they gain the ability to destroy themselves, whether or not they do, that's the mark of a truly mature species. And I think, you know, he's without being revolutionary, he does call for a change in, you know, in philosophy and outlook about
how he asks for unity as well, and also the fact that we need to stop squabbling on our little blue speck. But it's a wonderful thing as well, and it's just a very unique angle to look at reality and life, and it's something that a lot of very intelligent people have in common, like in regards to, like, you know, great scientists, great philosophers in the past and the time. How people like Richard Feynman, like how we used to observe the universe, Mother Nature, really, and how he would state that, you know, that's enough for him. Like, you know, everything, reality, you know, the universe, like a bumblebee, you know, or like a fucking supermassive black hole, like every, or an atom, everything has its beauty about it, and there's more depth to it, and it's just something that's so wonderful. And we are creatures of wanting to gain knowledge more so, always like further and further gaining of it. It's almost like a drug to us, and it's just wonderful, just like discovering Mother Nature. She'll fucking come out how she is.
Well, it's you know, without wanting to get into a sort of philosophical or religious debate, because we're both on the same side, and it would be very quick. and no, I was gonna draw, you know, to point to something, you know, Dawkins says about, you know, the more you understand about science, the more you understand about nature, that, you know, the more you can appreciate it, and that's what science affords us. And what I hope with this story is that, you know, before the oligarchs and the money men get their hands on this, we can at least hopefully, I mean, potentially, you know, with fusion, we could solve the world's energy crises, and we could, you know, we could solve world hunger, and, you know, this is, you know, I without wanting to gush disgustingly, this is a really potentially life changing, globe changing, history changing event. Would you not agree?
Amazing. I would definitely agree. I concur.
Let's stop waxing lyrical about how much we love science. And let's move on.
Verbally ejaculating.
I think we both did a bit of verbal diarrhea there. So get a nappy and let's do another really grim story that's going to make you really miserable.
Just wipe your
shitty, runny chops. This is a story from thepoliticalscrapbook.net, which I got October 15th. And this is, you probably heard this. So, where to begin with this one? Theresa May's Home Office, the border agency, the whole idea that we don't live in a horrible 1984 Orwellian society cracking down on minorities, unfortunately, is a naive one, because Theresa May's border agency have started sending text messages to have you not heard about this?
No.
Basically, so this is a for if you are not an official British citizen and you are living in the UK without the correct visa, etc. If you are an immigrant of spurious origin, the UK Border Agency have got your phone number, and they have been texting as well. Like, how anonymous. Like a fucking break. It's a fucking breakup via text. And the words you receive in this text message, should you receive it, are, and I quote this verbatim, "You are required to leave the UK as you no longer have right to remain." Now, that irks me on a number of levels. You no longer have right to remain. What about the right?
Yeah.
Rights. it just seems grammatically tenuous to start. Mm. But also, how fucking dark.
It's very dark.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's very dark.
It's the sort of like, I imagine it comes from an unblocked, you know, a blocked number that you can't ring back or anything like that. But what sort of person goes, yeah, yeah, that'll go. Because
what do they think? Like, I really can't comprehend how they assume that'll work. Be like, ah, all right then. Take care, United Kingdom. It was fun being here, but I better go back to my war-ridden country and get killed and raped or rape and go.
What on earth does that hope to achieve? Who do they think that appeals to? Oh, we've got to go. What is it, darling? We've got a text message from the UK Border Agency. They found us out, and it's back to the old country. It's like it's the most lazy, half-assed attempt. I think I can.
Off their backlog.
I know.
Bullshit backlog. Oh, what do we do? Send text messages. Oh, I'll keep them off our back.
There's a few people here who aren't meant to be here. What should we do? I'll send them a text and fuck off.
Go on. Yeah. Tell them to fuck off.
Well, but it got particularly dark when. It was sent to a gentleman called Suresh Grover, who founded an anti-racism charity. He's a UK citizen.
Yeah.
They're setting themselves up for a fucking fall, aren't they?
They are indeed. But, you know, it's something that we've been all become accustomed to, and the problem is it just like floats over your head and you're just like, once again, they've fucked it up.
But also there's another thing here which points to how indifferent the UK Border Agency actually are to this genuine problem, because their contractor, Capita, are supposedly the same people that the UK government uses like an outside contractor to chase TV licenses. So the same people who knock on your door like, "Have you got a TV license?" are also going to be like, "Have you got a right to be here? If not, you should probably fuck off."
And you were meant to be in the country. You better not be here tomorrow. Because, you know, the biggest problem is just like, how are we going to deal with all this backlog? How are we going to deal with all of these people who aren't legally meant to be in our country? I can't be asked to think of a long-term solution.
You can't be asked to think of a long-term solution. You can't think of any kind of serious strategy. You can't even think about why they might be here. Just send them a text.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm still clouded by fucking my mistress. I can't even comprehend. I haven't got the time to think about this. You know what? Send them a fucking text message.
You're right. It is
that'll postpone it for a little bit longer.
It is the most half-assed attempt, and it is the most unceremonious, epic dumping of all time, isn't it? Your country no longer wants you.
Yeah.
I've not been dumped by text. I've been dumped by phone. I think that not recently. Don't you know?
About dark,
not today.
Just wanted to let everybody know that.
It's all been leading up to this. It's been a terrible, terrible scam. Just to let you all know that I'm terribly suicidal. It's my final story now, Johnny. I think you're going to enjoy this one. I thought, let's go out on another light-hearted human interest story, which on the one hand is light-hearted, but is also incredibly dark.
Beautiful.
So this is from The Guardian. This is from 4 days ago by Abigail Haworth. Someone far better educated than you or I. she has written an article entitled "Why Have Young People in Japan Stopped Having Sex? What happens to a country when its young people stop having sex? Japan is finding out." And Abigail Haworth investigates. So this is essentially, this is quite a long feature about how young people of Japan, the sort of, I guess the bracket here, it says, are the sort of 16 to 24 are just not interested in sexual contact. In fact, the
young
adults, 45% of Japanese women aged 16 to 24 are not interested in, or, and I quote, despise sexual contact.
Right.
Now,
well, are you surprised? Like, really, in an essence, if you think, imagine, become a Japanese 18-year-old girl.
I'm not Japanese or a woman, I can't really make that leap. But essentially that is what the article goes on to say, that essentially, Japan as a culture is kind of is so disconnected from the real world in a lot of cases with their obsession with technology and the virtual world apps and whatnot, that actually they a lot of them are developing what is called celibacy syndrome, which was a lot easier to read than it was to say. Because, they're disconnected. And I was thinking about this, Johnny, and I just thought, I don't know about you, but the only thing that stops me having sex is people not wanting to have it with me.
Correct, yes. That is the only reason I don't have sex all the time.
The only reason I'm not having sex right now is because there's no one here that wants to have it with me. Beyond that, I don't know. Maybe it is a cultural thing. Maybe it's a gender thing. But reading the rest of the article, you'll see that it's not necessarily a gender thing. It's just generally an endemic problem through the under 40s, really. Because I wrote down some pot noodle love. I wrote down a quote is what people kind of in the Japanese are preferring, which is basically a sort of a sweet way of saying that people kind of
illusion.
And they're not really interested in the full shebang, commitment, sexual content, all this.
Yeah.
Kind of the idea of relationships. There's a quote here: relationships have become too hard. Yeah, people are looking for this easy this gratification, that casual sex or little trysts. But porn being a problem. There was a thing on Channel 4 last night called Date My Porn Star, which unfortunately I watched some of. it's about how and it's a it's a problem that we kind of have as well with kids, isn't it? That pornography forms unrealistic expectations of sex and relationships.
Do you know what disgusts me, though? And it's not the pornography.
That's quite nice, really.
No, I accept that because it's one of those things that is always going to be fucking around, isn't it? Excuse the terrible pun, but as I said, the not so recent, I guess, but the decision of the British government to block pornography sites, it happened about 6 weeks ago, a couple of months ago, but it was so transparent, going back to how I see society today. It was so transparent in the way that they brought it across. It was the fact that they were saying, oh no, we must protect the children. We must protect the children against pornography, but it's their way of wanting to have at least a hand in controlling the internet, to, taking that step towards, just monitoring one of the last three outlets that is left. But only in a few countries now, isn't it? A lot of countries have already begun this. Unbelievable.
But did you read? There was an article in the Metro not long ago. I remember reading about how the recorded numbers of times that people in the House of Commons and House of Lords tried to access pornography via the in-house Wi-Fi in a year. it kind of tots up into the hundreds of thousands. So one wonders why we're looking to a bunch of sexed up old public school boys for information. I'm sure that they will push.
They'll get it from their sources anyway. They'll be like, I'll tell you what, let's block it from everyone else and keep the rest of the poor for ourselves.
I imagine, Johnny, it went something a bit like this. Oh, yes, we'll put this through. Yes, that's it. Yeah, come on, Johnny. Put it through. It's through. And then they all, turn on their iPhones. Oh, fuck, not for us too. Oh, no, we want it. Bring it back.
We decided that we're not going to block...
Titty for the toffs.
To keep it, at a price. Keep it available and priced, of course. Pay-per-view. We own the pay-per-view, by the way.
Pay-per-view, yeah, there we go. Yeah. but I just want to close with quite a sort of sad part of this story, which is one of the guys that was interviewed sort of talking about his lack of interest in sex, his romantic apathy, to use a phrase, is he can't get aroused unless he's watching a Power Rangers style TV show with robots in. That's the only way he can get it up. I don't know about your fetish, Johnny. I don't know if you
I'm sure there's, you know, a lady out there who's willing to dress up, you know, and get him hard. He's just got to make it his, you know, ambition.
It's sad, isn't it?
Purpose in life, yeah. That is pretty fucking sad that he has to... That's the only thing that can get him, you know...
Oh. I don't know. I've never found lady robot sexy, so I can't.
No, I can't
empathise. But maybe, you know, I don't know what I'm saying.
I'm pretty standard. I'm all about, you know, the missionary position. and my face is just the same face that you pull when you're posing for a passport photograph. You know, very standard lovemaking.
Yeah. Things that turn me on: kissing, cuddling, tits.
Penis entering vaginas, that's about it. Look, making eye contact as well, and not smiling. No smiling.
Bit of eye contact. What's it do?
Oh, hey, it's getting a bit heated, isn't it?
But imagine like all eye contact got you like irreparably sexually aroused. All eye contact at all times. You go to the post office. I want to send this. Please just don't look at me. Just don't. Where's that two? So just fucking take it from me. Just go.
Can you stop looking at my breasts? No, because I'd look in your eyes.
I would rather look at your tits than your eyes.
Those gooey balls of loveliness just get me moist.
And on that bombshell, shall we call it? Let's bring to a close.
Bring out the bad Irish accent at the end.
and here endeth the first session. Johnny, it's been a learning experience. I feel like humanity has not done a good job of defending itself.
The arguments will become more constructive.
I feel
more focused and absolutely no purpose behind them.
I feel generally darker and more miserable as a result.
I do, yeah. I just feel like, you know, hey man, what's the point? I love how it, you know, even at the positive times when we were sort of like, oh yes, nuclear fusion, but it also has the devastating possibility of absolutely obliterating us all. Now let's move on to no sex in Japan.
I think it's first night nerves. And a general bleak outlook. Yeah, well, I mean, it was something of a social experiment. We came into this hoping to educate ourselves on reality, what it's like, what's going on out there, and whether or not we as young people should take an interest. I for one have decided that no you shouldn't. It's fucking bleak out there. Don't watch the news.
No thank you. Well, I think that there is many beautiful things.
We'll try and focus on some more of those.
Bleak, and then we can be all, you know, dandy and all queer as folk and all that shit.
Queer as folk. So next week, Johnny will be queer as folk. Until then, thanks.
See you later.